of where you will dwell forever. It's so amazing, it's almost unbelievable. In fact, it's almost beyond comprehension. I also understand that Brother John preempted me this morning. But he didn't cover 9 and 10. He covered starting at 11 to 15. I will go to the end of the chapter. So we'll see what happens. And in Revelation 21:9, it says this. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls full of the seven last plagues came and spoke with me, saying, "Come here and I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb." Who remembers those seven angels who had the seven bowls? Do you remember them? Remember they poured out their bowls on the earth? And in fact, if you remember back in chapter 17, one of those angels said, "Come and I will show you the harlot that sits on many waters." You remember that? So now one of those same angels, it could be the same guy, I don't know, or same angel, I don't know if you call him a guy, but the same angel is going to show John something. And he says, "I'm going to show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb." Now why would he say the bride? Because what we're really talking about is New Jerusalem. This is according to Warren Wiersbe. The eternal city is not only the home of the bride, it is the bride. A city is not just its buildings, it is also the people. How many of you have said to people, "I'm a Houstonian. I'm from Houston." What does that mean? Well, I live in a physical location called Houston, but I'm also a group of people who comprise the city, which are Houstonians. All right. He says the city John saw was holy and heavenly. In fact, it descended from earth to earth from heaven where it was prepared. What he's going to tell us is going to stagger the imagination. You really have to think hard of what. And I think it's in contrast to what he said about the harlot when he was shown Babylon. In the scripture, there are two major cities, Babylon and Jerusalem. This is a new Jerusalem taking the place of the old Jerusalem that we are familiar with. And the angels, one of the seven last plagues, and so forth. Now, John 14:1, Jesus promised this. "Do not let your heart be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you, for I go to prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also." So what's the promise that Jesus made to his disciples? All right, "There will be with him wherever he is." What else? Where was he going, he said? "I go to do what?" Prepare a place. So whatever he's been doing for 2,000 years, he has been preparing a place for who? For us. Amazing. How long did it take him to create this universe and this earth? 6 days. I wonder if he's been working for 2,000 years on this particular city. Amazing, huh? Not just a short time. He has put a lot of work and effort into this city and so forth. And he said, "If I come again," and the answer is he will, "I will receive you unto myself, that where I am, you may be also." This is going to be our abode. This is his promise to us, that he created a place. I like the other version that says, "In my Father's house are many mansions." Don't you? You want a mansion? Well, I'm going to tell you, you're going to have a one big mansion. Yes, Roger. In the South Sea Island, yes. And it's just gorgeous, right? So, Okay, that's possible that the mansions would be something that most of the people would not be used to. We'll see. We'll get some insight into this place. All right, now, Revelation 21:10 says, "And he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, having the glory of God. Her brilliance was like the costly stone, as a stone of crystal clear jasper." So what he says is this angel took him to a huge mountain. Why did he need to go to a huge mountain? He couldn't see it unless he was in this mountain. In other words, it is so big, as we'll see in a minute, that you had to get up on a high vantage point to be able to observe it. All right? And he says he calls it the holy city. Now, I looked at a lot of paint drawings and so forth, and this is about as close as I can come to what he may have seen, though we certainly cannot believe it. Because it says, if you'll remember back here, it says that its a brilliance is like a costly stone as a crystal clear jasper. Now, we don't know what a jasper is. What we know is crystal clear. The speculation is that this city looks like one big what? Diamond. One crystal clear, huge diamond, and so forth. And it's coming down out of heaven to this planet. Now, it never says, though I think it does, land on this planet. Remember, this planet's going to be different. You remember? There'll be no sea anymore. We don't know if it's going to be a bigger planet or whatever, or a smaller planet. But as we see in a minute, this is a mammoth city. It's just incomprehensible. Now, should we interpret this passage literally? What do you think? Why? All right, that's what he said. It's very specific about the dimensions, all of the aspects that you would normally find in any type of building. What's the problem? Let me ask you a question. If, in fact, David, are you listening? I know you're talking. Anyway, but I picked on you. He's our token astronaut. If back in the time of John in 96 AD, John had seen a spaceship traveling 25,000 miles an hour, what would he have described that? How would he have described that? Exactly, and that's the point. If you had, in fact, lived back in the 1800s, and you had fast-forwarded to the future, and you saw somebody cooking with a microwave when all you knew was a fire over a campfire, what would you think? How would you describe that? You push this time in there, and you hit this button, and it cooks. Right? Huh? It's not possible, is it? We're cooking, and there's no what? In most of them. Now, once in a while, they do catch on fire. I've had two do that. I'm hoping they never burn down the house, but the reality is, if you were to tell people that you put your 200 years ago that you put the cattle into, you cut them up and put them into a box that was refrigerated for all time, what would they think? No way. What's the point here? The whole point is what I've told you about the book of Genesis from the start. One of the three things that are crucial to understanding the book is it's historical, literal. It is chronological, more or less. And third, John writes down what? What he sees. So here you got a guy living in 96 AD, and he's writing down a description of a city that is mammoth. And he's writing it down to communicate it to us. Sharon? All right. Right. Something that, and a lot of people are visual learners, and they learn not by, some people learn by reading. Like I learn by reading. I remember what I read, but some people learn by just seeing things and so forth. But John was told to write down what he says. If you go all the way back to chapter 1, verse 10, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day, and I heard behind me a loud voice like the sound of a trumpet saying, write in a book what you see. All right? So, the challenge all the way through Revelation is this. He is describing items and things that we cannot relate to. But he's writing them in languages the best he can, led by the Spirit of God, to write down what his eyeballs are comprehending, though we may not comprehend it. Does that make sense? For example, my favorite is in chapter 11. You remember when the two prophets lay dead in the street, and it said the whole world watched them for 3 days? And back up until 1950 or 1940s, we would have said that is what? Impossible. Enter Ted Turner. and CNN. And all of a sudden it becomes what? Possible, you see? So that when you see what John is describing, you'll say, I can't believe he did such a good job. That's unbelievable. He's so accurate in what he communicated to us, and we're so stupid we couldn't grasp it. But he is describing something that he is seeing coming down out of heaven. He says it has the glory of God in it. The city is so big, he had to go to this high mountain and back up and get away from it. And I think that high mountain had to be pretty high, higher than anything we know about. Secondly, it's a holy city. In other words, it is unique. The word holy means is where we get the name hagios, or the same word as saints. We are holy if you're a believer in Christ. We are set apart for God's use. That's what it means. This city is set apart for God's use. Okay? Now, coming down ahead of him, as Jesus predicted, it reflects the glory of God and shines like a beautiful, expensive stone. Amazing. Now, John sees the Shekinah glory of God in the New Jerusalem. Back in Exodus chapter 40, it says, the cloud covered the tent of the meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the temple. Moses was not able to enter the tent of the meeting because the cloud had settled on it, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. What do you think the glory of the Lord looks like? Bright. I think bright's a good word. Bright, blinding. When we got an indication back in chapter 1 of Jesus Christ, you remember he was bright as the sun, and this cloud descended. Why do you think the cloud descended? Take the brightness away. Good, Evan. Take the brightness away and sort of dim down his brightness. All right? And this says that in 24, the glory of the Lord rested on Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it for 6 days. And on the seventh day, he called to Moses from the midst of the cloud, and to the eyes of the son of Israel, the appearance of the glory of the Lord was like a consuming fire on the mountaintop. In other words, God is usually, when he's seen, is what? He's bright. He's like a fire. He has to have this cloud around him, his aura that he has. And someday we're going to meet him face to face. Is that going to be an awesome moment? Yes, Jimmy. Oh, the giant mothership. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, he was kind of a wacko, and are you saying I'm like that guy? I don't know. Whatever. This is sort of like the blinding light that you can see coming down to earth. There is a city there. I don't know if you can see it beneath the cloud and the bright light. Now, 21:12 says this, and it had a great and high wall with 12 gates, and the gates 12 angels. All right, so what does it tell us? That there is a wall around this city. You with me? And it says that it's what? It's high. It's high. It's a high wall. I'll tell you how high in a minute. And it has 12 gates around the city. And that would be how many per side? For you math me, 3 per side for you math people. And there were 3 gates on the east, 3 gates on the north, 3 gates on the south, and 3 gates on the west. And the wall of the city had 12 foundation stones, and on them were the 12 names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. Now, you don't normally see a foundation stone, do you? Why? Because the building has been built on it. But in this particular case, he sees 12 foundation stones, 12 at deal, and the name of the apostles are on the foundation stones. And the names of Israel, the 12 sons of Israel, are on the gates. You with me? Now, why can he see the foundation stones? Because it's coming down and it hasn't set on the ground yet. Are you with me? Now, details of the walls and gates. First of all, they're very high. I'll give you a little preview. They're about 1,500 miles high. All right? 1,500 miles high. That high? All right. Number two. 12 gates have the 12 tribes of Israel. There is an angel at each gate. 3 gates on each side of the city. 12 foundation stones with the names of the 12 apostles. How big is it? The one who spoke with me had a gold measuring rod. All right? So you got an angel, it's got a measuring rod. That rod, by the way, is about 6 feet long. And it's gold. No cheap stuff with God's construction crew. All right? And he said it's the city is laid out as a square. All right? And its length is as great as its width. And he measured the city with a rod, 1,500 miles. Its length, width, and height are equal. Would that be a large city? 1,500 miles, and it's in the shape of one of two. I happen to favor a cube. Some authors favor a pyramid, but somebody rightfully made the observation that a pyramid is usually associated with what? Pagan religions. What pyramids do we know about? The Egyptian pyramids? Huh? The Bosnian pyramid. No, I hadn't checked them out yet. Yes, Doug. On the back. Yeah, there is one on the back. Now, if I had a dollar bill, I would show you, but I'm broke. So the Moody Gardens, okay. The Mayan pyramids? Thank you, Nick. I'm sure your mother's proud of you right now. And but can you think of a pyramid that is in God's eyes? You know, there is a rumor that the Hebrews built the pyramids back when they were enslaved. I don't know whether that's true or not. But I think it's more or less a cube. Notice what it says, and I measured its wall, 72 yards. The outer wall is 1,500 miles high, and its thickness is 216 feet. Is that a big wall? It's a mammoth wall. Russ? Why is there a wall? Good question. Is it for, huh? What, Patty? Nothing? Keep people out. Oh. Okay. Why is there a wall? If you don't need it for protection, why is there a wall? What does it communicate? What did it communicate in John's day? Security. Somebody said the magic word. It's a symbol of security. But this particular wall, you can see through anyway. All right? Now, we'll talk about the gates in a minute. Yes, Ron? Oh, yeah, there are people outside the wall. And we'll see, and they're also in 21, there are people outside the wall, too. I think it's drawing a picture of us to give us a shape of the city. 1,500 high, wide, and long, 72 yards. Notice what it says if we go back. According to human measurements, which are also angelic measurements. Now, why would it say that? Why would John communicate that the measurements that have just been taken for this thing, which was done by an angel carrying a 6-foot golden rod, which is 12,000 stadia, by the way, why would he say that it's according to human measurements, which are also angelic measurements? Randy? It is a literal measurement, and that the angelic godly measurements are what? Same as ours. All right? John, I knew there was something I should have calculated. I'm going to answer your question in just a second. That is supposed to be a square. All right. This is the size of the city. This helps, doesn't it? In other words, they say that if you put it the right side of this city on the Atlantic coast, the west side would go into Colorado. And if you took it at the tip of Texas, it would go almost to Canada. That's a big city. Connie? I'm going to do that calculation just for you, Connie. Huh? Well, you don't think you got 1,500-mile ceilings, do you? Would you think maybe there might be layers in there all over? I'm going to tell you how many people are there and how much space they get each. Yeah, Roger. How big are we going to be? I'm probably going to put on that 2 inches that I've lost over 50 years. Yeah, Randy. I don't know. I kind of doubt it. But all right, Tom. Okay. Excellent. 3.475 billion cubic miles. Is that a lot? All right. I'm going to give you a better calculation than that in a minute. If you were to put this New Jerusalem over the Middle East right now, of course, the sea is going to be gone, right? This is Jerusalem right here. It would cover all the way over to Italy and down across North Africa and up here in Turkey and so forth. That is one huge city. This is where we're going to live forever. It's going to take us a few million years just to tour it. Huh? I got some calculations on that too. Yes, Clarissa. You don't want everybody watching you on the bottom, huh? Yeah. Noel, I doubt if we're going to have elevators. He doesn't mention elevators. All right. Now, this is according to Cease, and he says this: how long would it take a man to explore this city of gold, whose every street is 1/5 the length of the diameter of the earth, and the number of whose main avenue, though a mile above each other and a mile apart, in other words, crisscross, just speculative, that you have all these streets, he said that would not be less than 8 million. And he says, stupendous magnitude. And then he gives his comparisons. Now, I want you to remember, this city, according to the Bible, is 12,000 stadia. Supposedly a stadia has 607 feet in it. I don't know whether that's true or not. And the technical calculation is 1,380 miles based on 607 feet, but that's really not relevant for what we're doing. But notice what he says. He says that Josephus says that Alexandria was 30 stadia, and Jerusalem is 33 stadia. Babylon was 120 stadia, and it had walls 50 cubits thick and 200 cubits high. This is 12,000 stadia every way. All the cities of the world are merely villages compared to this New Jerusalem. Now, here's your calculation. If there are 20 billion redeemed, according to Henry Morris, Henry Morris is dead now, but he was the president of the Institute for Creation Research, and he wrote a commentary. If you like commentaries from a scientific viewpoint, it's called The Revelation Record. And I always enjoy reading him. Now, I don't always agree with him, but that doesn't matter because nobody agrees with me either. But he did a calculation. He said if all the people who had ever been born might be 100 billion people. Now, I don't know whether that's true or not. That seems like a lot to me. And then he speculated and said, well, what if every one out of every five was a believer? 20 billion people. Now, if you start talking 20 billion, you would tend to think that things are getting kind of crowded, wouldn't you? Right? I mean, Tom's told us it's 3.75 billion miles. Just 20 billion. All right? What he says is if there were 20 billion people, and I believe he said that if, in fact, only 25% of the city was for people living, or you had your own personal possession. In other words, 75% of the city is dedicated to buildings and public parks, and we know there'll be rivers in it, and as we'll see next week, and so forth and so on. So if you only had 25% of it for human beings and there were 20 billion people, the city is so big that each person would have one cubic mile. Or a third of a mile in any direction, is my understanding. That doesn't make sense, does it? Well, I may have got that wrong. Anyway, you're going to have a lot of space. I know he said it was a third of a mile in each direction. I know that. How do you expect you're going to stay in shape, Randy? So what does that tell you about how big this place is? It's absolutely staggering as to the size of it. And remember, you're living there with no death, no pain, no suffering. Remember? No tears. Is that amazing or what? Now, the walls on the city. The walls were made of jasper and the city of pure gold, as pure as glass. How many of you have a gold ring on? How clear is it? What would it mean if you had gold that was clear as glass? Absolutely what? Pure. Best I can tell. I mean, I've never seen gold that's that pure. David has done what? Oh, thin gold. All right. Okay. The reality is the walls are made of jasper, which is clear. Normally, jasper, by the way, they thought was what's called translucent. But this city is said as clear as crystal. And within that city, John sees buildings and structures within that, and they are made as what? Pure gold. The what back then? Oh, the... Okay, yes. It's not what? Yeah, that's the NIV. Well, if it was good enough for Paul, Connie, is... Right. Oh, yours says glass, too. False accusation. I'll never use the NIV again, huh? The city's connection, it says, this is from the Bible Exposition Commentary. The walls are jasper, which is clear crystal, but the city itself is made of pure gold, as clear as crystal. The light of God's glory will shine throughout the city, resembling a huge Holy of Holies. By the way, the Holy of Holies, did you know that, is a cube. Did you know that? The city is what? I think it's a cube to mimic that. And as you're looking at it, I my mind can't comprehend that. I mean, you're looking at it and all the people are in it and so forth. Doug? Right. It's going to be what? It's got to be brilliant. I mean, huh? It's got to be incredibly awesome. Yes, Sharon. Okay. So the crystal itself filters the light as it comes through it to make it pure light. Good. Doug, you had something else? Okay. Anybody else? Yes, Barbara. Are the people in it or waiting on it? Right. The city and the people are considered one and the same, in other words, is what I said. Right. I would assume that it does, but, you know, we won't be limited at that point by our ability to move. We will be resurrected, and we will be able to move like Jesus Christ did. And how did he move? He went through walls. He actually went 30 miles with the two disciples from Emmaus instantly and showed up for the disciples, you remember? In other words, we'll probably travel at the speed of thought or the speed of light. Jim? Do what? Oh, it's pure. It does give that purity, doesn't it? Yes. What else would God build but something that's pure? Now, that doesn't mean it's all made of crystal or some jasper, and it, because it's not. We're going to learn that there's actually a river in it, that there are trees in it. In other words, there'll be parks and places that are mind-blowing. Now, the foundations, he said, the foundations of the city walls were decorated with every kind of precious stone. The first foundation was jasper, the second sapphire, the third chalcedony, fourth emerald, the fifth sardonyx, the sixth chameleon, whatever that is, the seventh chrysolite, the eighth beryl, the ninth topaz, the tenth chrysoprase, the 11th hyacinth, and the 12th amethyst. What does that tell us? Huh? He likes those jewels, doesn't he? Just like some women I know. Huh? We think, Richard, that the jasper, the first one listed, might be a diamond. But he sees these foundations. Now, I assume the foundations are in the body of the city, bottom of the city. I assume that there are each one at a corner. And then perhaps two in between, probably between the gates, because there's three gates, and that he's looking at it coming down, and he sees this, and what does he see? These magnificent jewels. Now, what are these jewels? Well, Hebrews 11, by the way, says, "For he was looking for the city, speaking of Abraham, which has foundations and whose architect and builder is God." So, Abraham himself was looking forward to a city that has foundations, something that's going to sit, I think, on this earth. Richard? Some of them are, yes. They're not exact. And here's the problem. Commentators are all debating over which of these stones are which. And I can't tell you, and I don't know that it's crucial. Just take my word for it. They're going to be beautiful. If you look at this, I highlighted some of them. Jasper is clear crystal. Sapphire is blue. I love the sapphire. Chalcedony is greenish blue. Emerald, of course, is green. The sardonyx is onyx, a white stone streaked with brown. I don't like that. Though some scholars describe it as red and white. Sardis is a red stone. Chrysolite, a yellow quartz. Beryl is green. Topaz, yellow green, et cetera, et cetera. Apple green. Hyacinth is blue. And amethyst is purple or blue red. What picture do you get if each one of these 12 foundations is made up of this mammoth stone that's this gorgeous deal? Huh? A rainbow. Can you imagine the beauty of the light coming through this thing as John sees it coming down? That's just staggering to me. Gaudy? Talk to God, Patty. I don't know. Huh? Well, you're not a jewelry person, right? Patty. Yeah. He spares no expense. Yeah, just to create those stones might take a while, right? How big do you think those foundations are if the city is 1,500 miles square in a cube? They've got to be mammoth, don't they? Several hundred miles big. And he's writing you what he sees. Amazing. Material of the gates. You believe that? The 12 gates were 12 pearls. Each gate made of a single pearl. That is one huge oyster, Doug. Now, why did God pick a pearl for a gate? By the way, how tall do you think these gates are? Try probably about 1,500 miles. Is that a big pearl? Pearls come about by what? Irritation. Yes, get it. Do what? Exactly. Okay. All right. She says that the gates will represent the suffering of the oyster and will represent the suffering of the Messiah for what he did for us. But notice that each gate is not a bunch of pearls, one pearl, which tells you something, doesn't it? These gates didn't evolve. God designed them. And they're magnificent. Now, the gates will be approximately 375 miles apart. I calculated that. And if you have three gates on each side and you happen to miss this gate, you have a long way to go to get the next gate, don't you? The reason they say they're probably as high as the city is high is because you can go in at different levels through the same gate. These are huge gates. These gates are not to keep things out. There are no gates. These gates are open permanently and allow things to go in and out of this new city. The streets of the city were of pure gold like transparent glass. Isn't that amazing? You've heard of the streets of gold, right? This is where it comes from. That these streets will be absolutely pure and transparent in their appearance. Yes, Jim. What eyes have never seen and ears cannot hear. It's just unbelievable. Look at what this says. I saw no temple in it, for the Lord God, the Almighty, and the Lamb are its temple. If you'll remember, we had the tabernacle in the wilderness. We had Solomon's temple, 1000 B.C. We had Zerubbabel's temple, 400 B.C. We had Herod's temple, which was part of Zerubbabel's in 70 A.D., and we had the millennial temple when Jesus Christ returns, but when the eternal phase starts, there is no temple. That gives added credibility to the fact that this cube is like the city is one giant Holy of Holies, containing God and the Lamb, the Father and the Son, and in their very presence within the city. All right? No sun or moon. And the city has no need of the sun or of the moon to shine on it, for the glory of the God has illumined it, and its lamp is the Lamb. What do you think about that? Rich? Okay. All right, so you have no shadows or turning in thee, right? All right, great point. I hadn't thought about that. He says that the crystal format structure diffuses all the light, so there's no shadows. In fact, we don't have any sun or moon to shine on it. It's literally does not require a temple or place of worship to provide access to God simply because God and the Lamb are actually present and constitute the temple. It doesn't require a moon or a sun. It doesn't mean that they don't exist. Some say they may exist. Yes, Cheryl. In other words, He has given us actual stones. You may be wearing one, right? So you can get sort of an idea what the eternal function. Good. Good. Isaiah 60 actually saw this day also. Isaiah said in chapter 60, verse 19, no longer will you have the sun for light by day, nor for brightness will the moon give you light, but you will have the Lord for an everlasting light and your God for your glory. Your sun will no longer set, nor will your moon wane, for you will have the Lord as an everlasting light. Amazing, huh? He saw this day coming. Now, the Scripture says, Jesus spoke to them saying, I am the light of the world. Right? He who follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. And he literally is going to become the light of the world. He will be the one who eliminates our city. John 12, he said, for a little while longer the light is among you. Walk while you have the light, so the darkness will not overtake you. And he who walks in the darkness does not know where he goes. While you have the light, believe in the light, so that you may become sons of the light. I believe that Jesus Christ, had he not veiled his deity, would have shown this light forth as he does in the book of Revelation chapter 1. All right? There will be others who don't live in the city. And this is one Ron and Irene asked me about years ago. Nations will walk by its light, and the kings of the earth will bring their glory into it. Amazing, huh? So who are these people? The nations would be the Gentiles. All right? We know that more than likely the Jews are going to be there, and the church is going to be there, because it talks about the 12 names of the apostles and the 12 tribes of Israel. Who are these Gentiles? The answer is, what, Barbara? So who would they be? They would be believers. Good point. Excellent. Otherwise, we don't know where these come from. But these people are outside the city on the earth. I mean, something is populating this earth. Did you know that? In fact, the original command to Adam was what? Be fruitful and multiply. And I believe that in the eternal kingdom, there will be myriads of people. Now, whether God starts over with a creation of man and woman again, I don't know. But there is going to be somebody in this kingdom that is outside of this new heaven and new earth. And in Revelation 21:25, it says, in the daytime, for there'll be no night there. If you like sleeping, you're in trouble. Its gates will never be closed. They will bring glory and honor of the nations into it, and nothing unclean and no one who practices abomination and lying shall ever come into it, but only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. So these people that go into the new earth, new heaven and new earth, are immortal, apparently, and they are believers. Otherwise, they can't get in the city. Now, notice, yes. I don't know. I don't know. They would be, that's right, they'd be here. The only thing is the earth is burned up, and I don't know what happens to them when the earth's burned up. Whether they're immediately translated, could be they're immediately translated to be immortal. Could be the people before the Israel and after. So, good point. There'll be no night there. The gates will never close. Nations will bring their glory and honor. Nothing unclean will ever enter it, despite the fact there are no gates. Others outside may also be in the Lamb's Book of Life. Jeremiah 29:23 says this, thus says the Lord, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, let not the mighty man glory in his might, nor let the rich man glory in his riches. I love that passage. That's a good one to memorize. Don't glory in your wisdom, your might, or your riches. But let him who glories glory in this, that he understands and knows me. That I am the Lord, exercising hesed, or loving kindness, judgment, and righteousness in the earth, for in these I delight. Oh, lunchtime. Any questions? We are through with 21. Lynette?